You're listening to Cinematic Adventures, proud member of the Misfit Faction Media Network.
Good morning, Vietnam!
I love the smell of napalm in the morning.
You're gonna need a bigger boat.
I feel the need for speed.
Roads, we're going, we don't need roads.
Snakes, why did it have to be snakes?
Vultures? We don't need no vultures. I don't have to show you any stinking vultures.
You make me want to be a better man.
Nobody puts baby in a corner.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
Love means never having to say you're sorry.
He's looking at you, kid.
Not bad. I'm just drawn that way.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Cinematic Adventures. Don't forget, if you guys are listening to us on the go, you can find us on Podbean, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, basically anywhere you get your podcasts. You can also find more of our content on our website, themisfitfaction.com. There you find links to not only this show, but some of our other shows, like the Multiverse Fancast and MF Uncensored. I'm one of your hosts, Paul. With me via the Zoom studio is Sean. Sean, how are you today?
I am just peachy, Paul. How are you?
I am peachy as well. I don't really know where that phrase ever came from.
It just sounds good.
It just sounds good. It does sound good. So, speaking of looking back at things, I get weird segue. This wasn't my best, but anyway, we are looking at a movie. Obviously, last week we did JFK, which was celebrating the anniversary of the JFK assassination, if memory serves correct, right, Sean?
Correct.
So now we're looking at a much less morbid anniversary, and look at the 30th anniversary of Mrs. Doubtfire, starring the late, the great, the always funny, the always amazing Robin Williams, who Sean and I were lucky enough to see live twice.
Was probably liked at least one of the two with like one of the best nights ever. We had great seats. We were like above them. We got to see the whole stage. It was wonderful. It really was.
Yeah. And the only downside was that they were the same show each time we went.
It was similar. There were some differences, but it didn't have a lot of new material, but I didn't care. I was ecstatic to see him live.
And if you guys are interested.
And think about, I mean, it's been 15 years since we saw him live.
Yeah.
2008. I mean, back then, we paid $100 for those tickets. It was not like expensive, crazy ticket price.
And we went to go see him at the Garden, right?
No. Mohegan Sun.
Mohegan Sun, that's right. So,
if we went to the Garden, we would have shelled out $1,000 for those tickets.
Oh, my God, right? Yeah, Mohegan Sun over by us, they have some really entertaining. We saw Chris Rock there also.
We did.
I'm trying to think who else.
My mom has seen Springsteen there. Mm-hmm. They have a nice small arena, home of. I want to say I don't know if UConn plays there or there's a WNBA team that plays there regularly, but they have a nice small arena.
Sports.
Great for concerts, great for comedy shows. It's very, very good.
Yeah, and if anybody's interested, the show is called Weapons of Self-Destruction.
Yes.
Is the title of that show. I think you can stream it a couple of places or at least buy the DVD.
Well, he did the film version, which I think he did out of D.C.
Constitution Hall? Yeah.
Constitution Hall, but that's the exact same show we saw, and I still think his Broadway one is the best. I mean, that one just I laugh from minute one to whatever, how many more minutes left the thing has. I mean, it is just nonstop.
I'll never not crazy. Laugh though, because there's a lot. He makes fun of Obama and Biden, and he everything he says about Biden is pretty funny. And considering it was
2008, 2009, it was definitely, I think it was during the administration, obviously.
Yeah, 2009. Oh, man, he was so funny. What a gem. And I'm sure we're going to mention it a few times during the course of the show, how great Robin Williams was. But do we have any news? Anything off the top of your head? Besides the fact that Disney's bombing everything? They're just not doing well anymore?
Well, they're not doing with the movies. I mean, I think what just came out, Wish, or is coming out. I'm not hearing great things about
Which
Wish.
Is crazy because it's a Pixar movie. Oh, no, it's not Pixar. No, it's not Pixar. It's not. It's their new, their computer-generated hand-drawn.
Yeah, it's the Wreck-It Ralph, Frozen, you know, that
mixed reviews from critics. Department. It's only made $50 million of its $175 to $200 million budget. Yeah, unfortunately, movies are not. I mean, some movies are still doing really well. Like, we're gonna talk about this movie. This movie killed it. But like more recently, Top Gun proved that people still want to go to the movies and see the movies, Oppenheimer, Barbie, all that stuff. So it's really, it's interesting.
I don't know yet. We got to give it a little more time, really, to see the, in my opinion, the what movies are making the money, what movies aren't. I don't know why these kids' movies really haven't really hit it. I mean, Elemental started off very weak, and it was like people were predicting it to be one of the bombs of Disney, you know, along with Lightyear. But it made its money. I mean, it just, I think it was a matter of fact that there wasn't a lot of movies to go into the theater to take it out of the theater. So it just slowly made its money and ended up being a box office hit for them. But they haven't had that one hit where, like, in the weekend they grossed double their budget. You know, they haven't had that since probably, what, one of the last Marvel movies, like Doctor Strange or, you know, Guardians.
Oh, yeah, Guardians was probably one of their biggest ones this year. And I know Ant-Man and the Wasp did all right, but didn't blow anybody away. But now we got the Marvels is out, and it's doing okay, as from what I was told. But, again, I have not seen it yet, which I blame all of you.
It's annoying the crap out of you.
It is annoying the crap out of me. I've never not seen a Marvel movie, like, its first week. And I blame you.
How is it my fault? Because you can go to the movies without me.
Excuse me. I'm allergic. I'm allergic to you being terrible.
It's fine. That means you can't be in the same with Ronnie either.
Who?
There you go.
Yeah, anyway. All right, so let's get started with this movie before I get more bitter. All right. So this movie was directed by the great Chris Columbus, and it stars Robin Williams, Sally Field, Pierce Brosnan, Harvey Fierstein, and Robert Prosky. And then obviously the kids, we got Matthew Lawrence, we have Lisa Jacob, and Mara Wilson in her first role.
Yep.
And then she would go on to be a very...
Matilda.
Yeah, Matilda was a big thing. And Matthew Lawrence would go on to a lot of other things. I don't think Lisa Jacob did too much afterwards.
She was in Independence Day.
Oh, that's right.
I don't know if she like left acting or just really never...
Well, her last movie was in 2000, and that was also the last time she did any sort of... Oh, she was in... Yeah, 2000 is kind of where she stopped working.
Yeah.
That's a shame. I blame you. It's your fault again. You need to just stop ruining people's lives.
Yeah, I can't help it.
That's fair. So, like, off the top of your head, when you think of this movie, what are some thoughts that come to mind?
It is a sneaky... very serious movie. It is a, you know, there are some tugging at your heartstrings moments in this movie that I think are some of the best that Robin Williams has done, that Chris Columbus has directed. I mean, because again, it might not be fair, but Chris Columbus, you think Home Alone, you think Harry Potter, you think very family-friendly films. And yes, this movie is very family-friendly, but it deals with divorce, it deals with bitterness amongst parents, what that does to the children. I mean, there are some tough scenes in this movie where you're just like, wow, that hits home. Yeah. That is, you know, I mean, I'll always, the ending scene in the courtroom, you know,
it's rough.
Just breaks your heart. And then even at the end there, when they're fighting on the TV studio, I mean, it's, you know, it is some A-plus acting by both Robin Williams and Sally Field. And you know, you're going to get that with both of them.
Yeah, people forget, like, Sally Field does a fantastic job in this movie. Like, she...
Oh, my gosh, she's fantastic. First of all, she's just fantastic actress. Mm-hmm. I mean, she really is. But, and again, I know we give Robin Williams his due, but people forget just how good of an actor he is was, sadly.
Yeah.
I mean, he's, you know... He's just as good in dramatic roles as he is in his comedic roles. Sometimes I would even say he's better in dramatic roles than he is in his comedic roles.
I'm still scared of 1 hour photo. That movie still scares the shit out of me.
Death to Smoochie, I still think, is just one of his.
Robin Williams has had quite the eclectic career. Now, for us, though, we grew up in the very family-friendly Robin Williams era that then turned into his more dramatic era. Like, he was doing this. He did Aladdin at the same time. I'm pretty sure I saw Aladdin before I saw this. I think I had to wait a little bit to see this movie.
Yeah, this, Aladdin, Ferngully.
Oh God, Fern Gully.
And then like right after this, he does Jumanji.
Oh, so good. I love Jumanji.
So, I mean, yeah, he was definitely in a family friendly, you know, mode at this time.
Well, because he was also, he was a vulgar comic. Like he held nothing back.
I wouldn't say vulgar. Vulgar is the wrong word. I mean, like Andrew Dice Clay is a vulgar comic. I think Robin Williams, he didn't mind using swear words, but I wouldn't call him like vulgar.
In the comedy show that we went to go see, his last set is him reenacting scenes from his movies as porn parodies.
Oh, really? I forgot about that.
Yeah, the last thing is him imitating Popeye climaxing. So that's why I said vulgar, because that's what came to mind. Yeah.
I just don't think he's vulgar.
No, he was such a great comedic force, but obviously, like, when he did his comedy, he'd be a little bit more... less family friendly. Is that preferred? Is that okay?
Yes.
Yeah. That's okay. Thank you. But so for us, like we grew up a lot with him being in, like we said, Aladdin and stuff like that. And just, he was like part of our childhood growing up. He was always around. He didn't do Return of Jafar though. I remember he did the King of Thieves though.
Oh, he did the King of Thieves because he had a falling out with Disney over the
something about money and marketing.
The marketing with Aladdin. He didn't want the genie to be front and center on the marketing.
Yeah, and then, of course, they realized that the genie was making the most money.
Yeah.
I would argue that the genie is the real star of the Aladdin movies.
That's fair.
But I'm trying to find his filmography. It's hard to find on Wikipedia. There we go. But, yeah, like, I was such a... growing up, like, he did Popeye. We said, you know, like, I remember seeing the trailers for that. Aladdin,
Hook,
Jumanji. You remember Jack?
Yeah. I did remember Jack. That was a good one. Have you ever seen 9 Months? His little, I guess you could say it's a cameo, but it's a very small performance in that, but I always laugh at that.
I liked Flubber.
Flubber, yeah.
That was also during that weird time where it was a lot of like remakes of, like you had your Dr. Dolittle, the Nutty Professor, Flubber. They all had that. Like, a lot of those were coming out around the same time. Yep. Obviously, Good Will Hunting, and then Patch Adams. Those are some of his bigger ones. Bicentennial Man, I forget about that movie.
Oh, my God. I remember my mom took me to see What Dreams May Come in theaters.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God. That movie was...
does she not like you?
Painful to watch.
Does your mom hate you?
It was a beautiful movie, but it was... I mean, for an 11-year-old, I was just like, when's he going to be funny?
Yeah, where's the funny? I did like him. He had a cameo in Friends.
With Billy Crystal, yes.
Yeah, which was really funny. He did the episode of Whose Line Is It Anyway that I know I can still watch anytime. That and the Richard Simmons episode. Awesome. Yeah.
Definitely watch that.
And SVU. I forget. That was a great episode.
That was a great episode.
Oh, man.
Such a great episode.
We do a whole episode probably on Robin Williams, just how great he was. What a shame. But so let's run through this movie, though. The movie starts off with the most unrealistic depiction of voice recording ever. Like, it's not how you do it, but okay. So
could have been how they did it, but yeah, in most cases, the voices are done long before the animation is even drawn.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, unless they were doing maybe like a redub or something like that, but...
I think that's basically what it was. It was just a redub because he was just doing the singing, I think, or I don't know if he was the actual.
Doesn't he do the? No, he does all the lines for the bird too, and I think he does the lines for the cat.
Yeah, but I think wasn't that the whole point? He was like adding to the lines, and they didn't want him to, or something.
He was changing the lines after they put the cigarette in the bird's mouth. Which again, let's also preamble this. This is 1993, where smoking in cartoons was totally normal, and I think that at one point, like. The guy who's directing him says, yeah, you can't say that. It's going to get us like a PG-13 rating. He says something along those lines. And I'm like, nowadays, you can't even have a cigarette on TV. Like, it's wild. But anyway, so he ends up quitting his job basically because he just disagrees with the morally questionable script. Again, after smoking a cigarette, the poor bird. But yeah, so he doesn't agree with the script and how he's being directed. And so he quits. I don't know about you, Sean, but if I just randomly quit my job over a moral obligation and came home and told my wife that, I don't know if it would go that well.
Maybe. Yeah. Depends on, you know, what it was, but you never know.
About a script. So we get introduced to the whole family. Now, it would have been really easy. We talked about Sally Field before. It would have been very easy to make her just purely the quote-unquote bad guy in this movie. And they don't. Like, that you under this is a movie that as a child I loved because Robin Williams being Robin Williams, but as an adult, I'm like, holy crap, they tackle some stuff in this.
Yeah. I mean, you obviously get a very quick realization that the mother is, you know, obviously in the business world. She's respected. She's, I don't know if I would say powerful, but she's worked her way up in this business. And, you know, Robin Williams is just kind of laid back and, you know, voicing cartoon characters, seems to be a partier. And it's the son's birthday and the father's like, oh, I'm going to throw you a wild party. And they're like, no, mom said no parties because he didn't get good grades. Well, I'm going to go against mom. And you're like, well, here it comes.
Well, what does he say? Mom's like, the most unrealistic thing in this entire movie, he says, mom's not going to be home for another 4 hours. They put together a raging bash with animals.
Yeah. And, petting zoo. And
they think
dancing.
That they're going to get this cleaned up. Like, all right, we're going to party for 2 hours and 59 minutes. And then we're going to spend an hour and 1 minute just cleaning up.
And no one bothered to tell the next door neighbor because, oh, no one thought the next door neighbor wouldn't, you know.
So apparently there was a cut subplot with Daniel basically having an antagonistic relationship with that neighbor. Like, she was supposed to appear a few more times.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. So let's also establish this movie has like almost over 30 minutes of additional footage that was not in the film, which is crazy.
Not counting like footage of just him going off on rants and his character. Oh, as Chris Columbus says, he's got like hours and hours of unused footage of Robin Williams just breaking character and all that stuff. Williams.
Like apparently there's like there could be a rated R version of this film. Like, that's how much they have. And
there was all different 3 versions of this movie. Like, Chris Columbus was like, my goal is PG-13, but I could have had a PG. I could have had an R. I was like, I could have had an all.
Yeah, which is awesome. And, you know, it's funny because Disney, when they worked with Robin Williams, they got frustrated with his ad-libs, how he constantly changed the script and constantly did his own thing. And obviously now they struck gold with the genie. But at the time, they were super frustrated because they had to keep reanimating. And
yeah,
especially in the early 90s, doing reanimation without computer effects, oh god, it would take months. Like, you could push back an entire film just by changing. That's why for Aladdin King of Thieves they got Robin Williams back, but he just redubbed it. He did not do any new script points because Dan Castellaneta from
Castellaneta from the Homer Simpson.
Yeah, he did the second movie. He did Return of Jafar, and then he finished King of Thieves. Like, it was done, and then Robin Williams was
He also voiced the genie in the show.
I think so, too. But, so, like, I know Chris Columbus had, like, a ton of different cameras set up. He let different takes happen. He had film footage of the crew laughing at everything, and just, it seems like this movie was just a really good time on set.
Yeah.
But so Daniel throws this huge party. The neighbor calls, and apparently, they were supposed to have a huge subplot. The nosy neighbor, Gloria Chaney, in which after Daniel dresses as Mrs. Doubtfire, he fools Gloria into killing her flowers by spraying dog urine on them, and a final confrontation in which Gloria sees Daniel in his Mrs. Doubtfire body costume without the mask. Huh. Interesting. So, he gets ratted out. Miranda shows up, and, like, the cops are there, like, writing tickets to her, like, for all the animals.
That's right, yeah, right.
And just it's just terrible. And she comes in, and it's Daniel and the two kids. They're dancing on the table to Jump Around by House of Pain, which was the definitive 90s song. And I don't think any reasonable parent would not be mad at this.
I mean, you get a sense clearly that the marriage had not been working for a long time. During their fight, you know, he has his side of it. She has her side of it. Like, she's tired of being the bad parent. She's tired of him always being the good guy. And he's just like, you know what? Ever since you started working for that company, you've become, you know, just hard to live with. You know, like, that's like, he thinks all she cares about is her career. And she thinks all he cares about is himself.
And having fun and just being the fun parent.
Yeah. So she springs on him that she wants a divorce. And even that scene is tough to watch because, I mean, Ron Williams he's broken. He's like, you know, yeah, they're fighting. They don't let, you know, they're fighting each other. But he's like, I love you. Like I don't want to do that. I don't want to break up. Like,
and the kids are watching too, you find out.
Yeah. And then you cut to them in court and, you know, the judge is obviously on Miranda's side. So he's like,
well, you know, you're going to get. In fairness, it's because Robin Williams has no job and he has nowhere he's going to live. Miranda was the sole, was pretty much the breadwinner of the family. Like, I'm sure he did fine doing voiceovers, but
She's clearly the breadwinner, but he gets visitation rights every weekend.
It's like every Saturday, and they'll share custody if he can find a steady job and a suitable residence within 3 months. So yeah. I'm going to preamble this. I'm a child of divorce, like a lot of people are nowadays. So when my parents got divorced, I was super young, like 6 years old. So a lot of this stuff probably happened behind the scenes, and I have no idea. So watching this movie now, especially like as an adult who's married, and I grew up with step parents and all that, and very, very fortunate in my situation. But like, I watch this movie, I'm like, holy crap, this stuff resonates. This sucks.
Yeah.
But of course, we get the iconic scene of him going to get a job, and he does voices, and it's just
with the social worker. That was
Mrs. What's her name? Oh God, it's gonna drive me crazy.
Because
she's only in two.
Mrs. Selner.
Mrs. Selner. Mrs. Selner. Melanie still does the hello when he fixes his face up after putting the cake on it. But so he gets a job and he's just basically stocking, or he's shipping.
He's shipping out film canisters. Like he's still high on his horse that he's an actor. He's like, oh, I'm an actor. I'll perform these, whatever. And the guy's just like, no, you're boxing them up. You're shipping them. That's it.
That's all you do. And what about those ones? You ship them. Oh, okay. I wasn't sure. Oh, God. He's so
After you box them, you ship them.
Oh, good, 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 good. But so now we find out that Miranda's looking for a housekeeper. And Daniel, like, not at first, his intentions are a little bit more altruistic. Like, how about I just do it? Like, I can. She's like, no.
She comes to pick the kids up at his new apartment, and it's mess. He hasn't unpacked much.
They're eating Chinese food out of the
eating things. Chinese food because he doesn't know how to cook. So she's obviously giving him grief about it, or she's gloating that you're really setting yourself up here, man. Like you think you're gonna share custody with me? Good luck.
Yeah. So he alters the ad. Which is because that's how they used to do it. They used to do paper ads, and you would fill out a card and all that stuff. So he starts calling. I never got this as a child. I didn't understand what he was doing. I thought he was just messing with her. But then he calls her a few times. It's like different characters just to be like, look at how terrible everybody is. And then now I'm going to come in with this perfect example of a lady and go from there. And some of it's a little dated. Let's not lie. Some of the stuff in this movie is a little dated, especially with
you're back in your cell. Don't make me get the hose.
Hello. I used to be one, but anyway, yeah. This movie. Some of it, Sean's laughing beyond the camera. Yeah. So he creates this character called Mrs. Doubtfire. How do you say the first name? Euphigenia.
Euphigenia Doubtfire. Ask me where the Euphigenia comes from. I don't know.
I kept looking, like, because obviously he pulls a newspaper article and it says something like police Doubtfire was accidental, and that he pulls those two words. And his brother and his brother's partner are makeup effect artists, which is cool. And I like Harvey Fierstein. I think he's always really funny, whatever he's in.
He's great.
So, they decide they're going to help him turn into a woman, an elderly British woman. And
this was always my favorite part when I was younger, when they put the different, they set him up with the different looks. And he's got like
the long black
hair with the 9-inch red nails. And he goes, I think this will be too much for the kids, no?
The Moyle joke, I don't know how they got that one through the censors. I think they didn't know what he was talking about, because something about buying candy from a Moyle because it's too chewy. Yeah, gross.
Oh, the old lady with the nose, and then he's got the Barbara Streisand look.
Yeah, matchmaker, make me. Yeah, the whole scene is hilarious, but then they decide that they're going to do a full prosthetic face, which
I just love the line. I love the line. He goes, older, you mean Shirley MacLaine older or Shelley Winters older? And he goes, what's the difference? It's like more scotch tape and red hair dye. He goes, what about Joan Collins? He goes, I don't have strength for that.
It's a very funny scene. Ironically, the Harvey Fierstein and the guy who plays his partner are only in two scenes in the entire movie.
Pretty much, yeah. It's that major scene, and then I think you see Harvey Firestein one more time when he gets the replacement mask. But after that, yeah, no, they you don't see him again.
I feel like there's another scene where like Daniel's all depressed. Maybe in the beginning of the movie, before this scene.
In the beginning, yeah. You see him because he's staying over there, you know, and he's talking to his mom on the phone.
Yeah. Oh God, I can't imagine that conversation. But so. Yeah. Mrs. Doubtfire makes her grand appearance. Apparently, it took 4 hours for them to apply that makeup, which isn't too bad.
And we don't see it until he shows up at the door of the house. So, like, they hide him when they decide that that makeup is good. You only see him from the back. So, it's
any closer, and you'd be
nice reveal.
Yeah. Apparently, Robin Williams would run errands and walk around the streets of San Francisco in full Mrs. Doubtfire attire, including going to
sex shops
and buying sex items like dildos and adult erotica or smut as it is currently called. But yeah, so smut. So he shows up and it's weird how he immediately goes into very strong, like making the kids do their chores and all that stuff, throws the remote control into the fishbowl, which was a great shot. Like
he's putting on an act. I don't know if it's, you don't get a sense if it's an act at first or if he's generally like, okay, I got to be more stern with them. Like if he's doing it for his sake or he's just, again, I think he's just putting on a character.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, that first meeting. And then I love how he starts to cook. I mean, this is starting to cook dinner and he has no idea what he's doing.
So apparently not only did he actually hurt himself during that, like he burned his hand really bad. Grabbing one of the,
the pot, the top of the pan.
No, the spoon. Apparently, originally the spoon was metal. Yeah, so it heated up. But yeah, apparently they lost their minds at the whole "my first day as a woman, I'm getting hot flashes." That's probably one.
It smells like burnt rubber in here. God, it's hot here.
He's talking to himself in a adorable voice too, which is funnier.
So great.
Oh
really
God.
Is.
And but so he ends
to
up
be to be a crew member on that, it just, I can only imagine that was just how people couldn't hold it in, have the laughter, all that stuff.
Yeah. But,
and then he orders out from this like fanciest restaurant ever. And I always found this hysterical because he's running out of time and he orders out from this restaurant. But did he clean up the hot mess of stuff in the kitchen? Did he ever do that?
Probably not. But so we get our first montage of the film where the kids are doing really well with Mrs. Doubtfire. Miranda's kind of relaxing a little bit with everything, with the less stress at home. And Daniel's doing better at work and is cleaning his apartment to the point where I think it's around this time in the movie that he tries to convince Miranda to just let them, you know, let him be the housekeeper. But they're like, we can't get rid of Mrs. Doubtfire. She's the best. He's like, damn it. Son of a bitch. But anyway, so
and he ends up going home and he gets surprised by the Mrs. Sellner character because she's obviously got to come and check on Daniel to make sure he's abiding by the judge's ruling.
I'm his sister.
So we have this hysterical back and forth because she's like, who are you? And he goes, oh, I'm Daniel's sister.
We find out later that Daniel doesn't even have a sister.
Daniel doesn't even have a sister.
But it is probably one of the funniest.
Oh, it's so great. He's just like, sis. And he's just go back and forth, changing and all that stuff. And then we get probably the most iconic moment in the movie, and that's the face in the cake scene.
Yeah, apparently they were supposed to use something
else.
They were supposed to use something else, like a Jell-O or something like something green, and it just didn't work. So they ended up going with the frosting, Oh, God, it's still so good.
My nightly face mask, you know, would you like one cup, one shot of vanilla or two?
Oh, it's two
dripping
for you.
Into her tea. And
then she tries to like put it on her face. She's like, huh.
Yeah.
And get the scene of the mask falling and then getting run over. Apparently that took like 40 tries for them to get that scene right.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
So,
and two kids see him from across the street.
Oh my God, mom. Yeah. So again, some of this stuff has not aged particularly well.
We get introduced to Pierce Brosnan as Stu Dunmire.
So
this is Pierce Brosnan before Bond.
Oh yeah, this is right before.
So like right before Bond, literally Goldeneye. I don't know if he was filming or about to start filming Goldeneye once he filmed this movie or what, or if he was even known to be the next Bond. But yeah, because I remember watching this movie and then like not too long after, I'm like, oh, this guy's James Bond. Okay,
weird.
Yeah.
Oh, love
Weird. Bros.
So apparently they originally had Stu written as a pure antagonist, as somebody who was just trying to like get with Miranda. And I think he was going to send the kids off to boarding school. That was like a really big thing in the 90s was like the evil new parent that's going to send the kids to boarding school or military school. Like the parent trap. Yeah. Like all these.
It takes two.
Oh, God. Everything. They wanted to send the kids to boarding school. I was like, all right. That was like my biggest fear as a child. I'm going to boarding school.
That's the one thing about Stu's character. Like, you really, they didn't, and it's not like it was a big problem, but they really didn't stretch out his character. Like, you got a sense that Miranda liked him, but it wasn't like, they never really made it like a romantic thing between the two of them.
It wasn't flaunting, but like, obviously there was they were dating.
There was a mutual attraction there, but like except for the scene where they go to the clubhouse, the club, you know, like you never see the two of them like, you know, in a romantic situation,
which is fine. Like I still just assume that they were dating, but they don't flaunt it like some other movies, like Rookie of the Year with Jack, just constantly. But I think
the scene in the club where he pegs him with the fruit. He goes, so, "It's a run by fruiting."
That is the only scene, and that's the only line in the entire movie where Pierce Brosnan says something negative about Daniel. Like again, they wanted to. They originally scripted him to be pure, but they're like, he's not like, and it makes it much more realistic. And I think it worked in the favor of having Pierce Brosnan be almost like a neutral party in this weird disaster. I'm curious to see if him and Miranda were still dating afterwards, but.
Yeah, because you don't see him after the whole restaurant scene again.
Right,
you
never hear anything about what's going on with them. So, yeah, we get the whole, hey, like, I'm very interested, and, like, the kids are great. Like, you know, again, that's another thing. It went against the tropes, where it's like, oh, as soon as these kids are out of the way, I'll have their mother all to myself. Like, they all sounded like 1950s villains. But he makes the line, because Daniel's over there just getting drunk as Mrs. Doubtfire. And... yeah, he says Daniel's a loser. He goes to walk away, and it was a run by fruiting. Still, such a great line. But everybody's like doing really well until Mrs. Doubtfire is discovered by his son.
Oh,
because
it is a great scene. It really is a great scene because, I mean, the kids are generally like freaked out. Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't you be? And the older daughter, who at first was very skeptical of Mrs. Doubtfire and was just starting to
come around to her,
up to her, come around, and now she's got like, oh, I knew it all along. There was something about you, and he says the Matthew Lawrence says something.
He says
no shit.
He says no shit. Because they're like ready to call the police. You watch your mouth, young man.
And they're just like they freeze. They're like, wait, what?
Yeah. So it's
a great scene because he's like he's honest with them. He's like, I don't go to old lady bars. I don't do this. It's a job. I just do this to see you guys. That's it. There's no.
Yeah, it's a mask. Nothing's physically. I think at one point he does mention like a plastic surgery statement, like that he's still.
Yeah.
But anyway, so the two kids find out, but they're not going to tell the youngest because she can't keep a secret for life. She's also a kid, like a little kid. Now the following day, Daniel is cleaning up, or he's just walking through a set and he sees like a show that's being filmed and it's just not that good. So he. When everybody's gone, he decides to put on a little presentation of his own, you know, like with the dinosaurs.
Yeah.
And it
unbeknownst that like the head of the studio is watching him.
Yeah. And he really liked it. And he's like, you know what? I like the humor and, you know, it's got story. It's got, you know, heart. Kids would learn from it. So because it's almost like I think the show that was
public access television. It's like basically like Channel 13 for us. It's like that's where he's working. He's working at like a public access network. Mm-hmm. That's really struggling to find, you know, good children's programming. Because you see a scene earlier where it's like an older gentleman is just kind of doing this show about dinosaurs, but he's just
dry and very bland.
Dry, and he's just old, and he's just spewing facts, but he's not giving any like lively information, and like people are falling asleep. But the guy at the camera's falling asleep, and all that stuff.
It's not like Bill Nye the Science Guy.
No.
So the CEO is like, hey, I want to hear more of your ideas. We're going to go to this restaurant at this time on Thursday. Okay, good. Yeah. Great. But then he gets invited to the I would have fought against the birthday party. Like, I'm sorry, I can't. I cannot physically go. I have.
So I'm like, I have plans with someone else, or I would have just, you know.
I have dialysis. Like, I could have figured something out. But he can't make himself do it, so he tries to do both. And wacky hijinks ensue because he also starts drinking. And he's going back and forth, table to table. And like at one point, he goes back with lipstick on and he's like, oh, ran into an old girlfriend. But then
is when he shows back up in full costume. He's at the wrong table.
Can I help you? And he's like, he doesn't realize it. So he ends up pitching the character of Mrs. Doubtfire. So it works out. But he also, in his drunken stupor, put pepper on Stu's meal, even though he specifically said, hey, I'm allergic to pepper. Please don't put any on. Okay. So I like to hope that he didn't think that he had like a lethal allergy, but it's still a food allergy. Like he tried to. Hey, oh, no, I killed the bastard. And of course, help is on the way, dear. It's still, he's just jumping over things. It's probably
jumping over the cement walls. Yep. And he's like help in full costume.
And does the Heimlich maneuver.
Isn't that like something early on where he tells her, is like, I'm really good at the Heimlich maneuver. Like, and that's something he knew like before he became Mrs. Doubtfire. It was something, as I recall in a scene, he talks to her about it and he's like, you know, I can't remember, but I'm pretty confident like that's like a something he knew beforehand.
I don't know.
You know, but.
But so he does the Heimlich maneuver, but his face gets removed and everybody finds out. And yeah. So.
He freaks out.
Yeah. So at the next. At the next custody hearing, the judge decides, even though Daniel met all the requirements that the judge required and he wants to still see his kids, the judge is like, yeah, you did a great job. However, not only are you an incredible actor who just fooled all these people for months, I'm not going to be too wise to that. He also finds that like the whole thing is very disturbing. Like, the most realistic thing for a judge. He's like, you need psychological help, man. And he gives Miranda full custody. And Daniel's only allowed to supervise Saturday visits. And everybody, the kids are upset. Daniel, even Miranda was like, oh, man.
So yeah, she's visibly upset by the decision in the end. And then you get cut to, you know, them interviewing housekeepers and they're finding nobody. And, you know, they just have this kind of moment where they're saying, I miss her doing this. I miss her doing that. And even Miranda's like, yeah, I miss this. And she's like, wait a minute. She's not real.
Yeah. But then they hear her voice and they find out that Mrs. Doubtfire now has a television show called Euphigenia's House. And it has become a nationwide hit. And kids love it. Like, parents love it. So Miranda goes to visit and she's like, we've been watching, you know, every day. It's like having you back in the house. And they argue too. Like, this movie could have easily put them back together, like as the trope would go.
No, that is true. And that I thought that was a great move on part of the movie that it shows that no, there is no happy ending in terms of the parents getting back together, but it shows that a happy medium can be made.
Yeah, I think they even like, we'll be okay, but it's for the kids.
I love the back and forth between them in the scene. And Robin Williams is generally like, I hate you right now. Like, do you have any idea what it's like to have somebody in a room watching me thinking that I'm going to do something to these kids, that I'm going to, you know, run away with them or I'm going to do something horrible to them? Like, do you get what that's like?
So apparently there was a deleted scene that took place at, what was it? At a spelling bee, at Lydia's spelling bee competition. There's a confrontation between Miranda and Daniel after the identity was revealed at the restaurant. And apparently, they had a huge fight there, but they cut it out. So they decide to not only share custody, but also have Daniel come and watch the kids after school every day, like he originally wanted. And I guess the mom talked to the judge and worked that out. And I do like how at the end, you know, he takes the kids, but Miranda sees an episode of the show where Mrs. Doubtfire gets a letter about a kid whose parents are getting divorced. And it rounds out the movie very nicely for me.
Yeah.
But that's Mrs. Doubtfire. It is fantastic. It is such a good movie. Yes. It still holds up exceptionally well, even though 30 years later, man, like
30 years later. I mean, there was always threat. There was always talks of a sequel for years. I mean, prior to Robin Williams' death, obviously, I mean, you would always hear like, oh, the script's in place for Mrs. Doubtfire 2. And again, it was one of those movies where it's like, you don't need a sequel to this movie. You really don't. Like, why do that? Like, so I'm glad they ended up not doing anything more with the character, because I just thought it's one of those single movies that you just you love and you don't need any more of, you know, that.
And I like how, unfortunately, Robin Williams did pass away in 2014, I think it was around that time.
Are you serious? It's almost been 10 years.
Yeah, it's something like that. And Chris Columbus said, like, they had all these ideas, but you can't do this movie without Robin Williams. And I respect that. I really, truly do.
It really has been. In August of 2024, it'll be 10 years since he passed away. Like, that wild. Blows my mind.
But I'm glad that they're like, hey, like, this was Robin Williams. You can't remake it. Like, you can't do something. Just let it be. Like, let it just be as good of a movie as it was.
They adapted Mrs. Doubtfire to Broadway into a Broadway musical. Right. Sadly, it hit right as COVID obviously happened. So it only was on Broadway for like 83 performances, which sounds like not a lot, which really it isn't. It's basically, you know, like 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, it got decent reviews, you know, from what I hear. But sadly, it just I don't think it could get back after the pandemic happened. Yeah. And this is definitely one of those movies that just you laugh, tugs at your heartstrings. And it's just an overall really good movie.
On a budget of $25 million, it walked away with $441.3 million. That's huge, especially in 1993. And it's one of those movies.
It was the second highest grossing film in 1993 behind Jurassic Park.
Yeah, which is wild.
That's crazy. I mean, that's crazy when you think about it.
It got mixed reviews.
But this small movie.
Yeah, it got mixed reviews when it was released, but it's improved. It's one of those movies that has gotten better with time. And
yeah.
Unfortunately, I hope we eventually do see some of the deleted some of the other things, like a lot of the deleted scenes and the what if there was an R cut of the film, I would have loved it.
Yeah, Chris Columbus has said that he's been trying to pitch a documentary to make about the movie because he's got so much behind the scenes footage and so much just footage of Robin Williams, you know, riffing and all that stuff that he wants to try and make a documentary out of it. But
I'd watch it.
I don't know if he's going to do it on his own or if he's going to get Fox behind him to fund it.
Oh, I'm sure they would. In a heartbeat, that would make money.
But so Disney has the rights to this movie.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I wonder if that's where you can stream it.
I don't know if you even can stream Mrs. Doubtfire now that I think about it. I've never really noticed if it's on any of the streamers.
Let's find out.
There we go. Yeah, no. It's
whoever finds out first wins.
It's on the Roku channel.
Oh, stupid.
It's not on any of the major, not on Netflix or Hulu or Disney Plus.
It's not a movie I see on TV very often either.
No, you really don't, actually, now that you think about it. Maybe like TBS Once in a Blue Moon or something like that.
Yeah.
But Star City rating?
I'm going to give it a 4.5.
Ooh, very nice.
It is a
very
solid nice. Movie. It's hard to find anything wrong with this movie.
I agree. I think I'll go with you on that. 4.5 is, I think it's one of Chris Columbus's best movies.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, you know,
but it's one of those movies that benefited from the director and the talent understanding mm-hmm. each other to a point, to the best point. Like, it could have been very easy for the director to be like, you're doing it this way, and that's it. Like,
yeah.
But for Robin Williams is a force of nature. You couldn't just control him. And
yeah.
You need the right director to pull the right emotion out of him. So, yeah. Once you get Robin Williams started, though, like, there was no stopping him. It was awesome. But if you guys would like to interact with us a little bit more, no Fan Feedback Friday, because this past week was Thanksgiving and Black Friday, and I totally forgot, I'll be honest. But if
You did the Disney one. We didn't remember that from the previous week.
Did I? Well,
because remember when we did JFK,
That's right. All right. So, yes, we do have Fan Feedback Friday. Excuse me. I am the worst. So it was, you can only keep one Disney song, and which one will it be? So the choices were Zero to Hero from Hercules, I'll Make a Man Out of You from Mulan, Hakuna Matata from The Lion King, Eye to Eye from a Goofy Movie, A Whole New World from Aladdin, Under the Sea from Little Mermaid, The Bells of Notre Dame from The Hunchback of Notre Dame, and Colors of the Wind from Pocahontas. Oh my God, that was so much talking. All right, so we have one vote for Eye to Eye. We have one vote for A Whole New World. We have one vote for Under the Sea. We have one vote for I'll Make a Man Out of You. And one vote for Zero to Hero. Bless my soul, Herc is on a roll. That's awesome. But yeah, nobody voted for Notre Dame. Or Hakuna Matata.
If If you had put a different song from Hunchback, I would have probably picked that song.
I still say Hellfire is one of the best Disney villain songs of
Hellfire all time. Out there, so good. That movie is so underrated. It's not even funny. But The Bells of Notre Dame is a beautiful song, but it's more just a musical score than it is really a song to me. But
that's fair.
Under the Sea, I think, is the best because it's the first one in that, you know, Renaissance group of songs that really just struck a chord with everybody.
Agreed. But if you guys want to participate in Fanfeedback Friday, it's super easy. Just go to our Facebook page every Friday from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. You'll find it up there. And make sure you guys like the page while you're there. You can also find us on all the other social media, Twitter, TikTok, Instagram, whatever it is. Just type in The Misfit Faction or Cinematic Adventures, and odds are you'll find some of our stuff. But
all right, I just found out a nice little nugget about the movie we just talked about. It was based off a book.
It was? What was the book?
1987 novel called Alias Madame Doubtfire.
Oh, huh. Interesting.
So, yeah, it was a book written by English author Anne Fine for teenage and young adult audiences.
Huh. Interesting. I'm gonna have to do more research on that. But with that in mind, that is going to wrap us up for today. As always, I'm Paul.
I'm Sean.
And we'll see you guys next time.
Have a good one.
Hey guys, it's Paul, and the Misfit Faction is looking for your help. We are trying to grow not only our network, but also grow our brands. And the best way to do that is if you guys are looking to start your very own podcast. Maybe you guys have been listening to us for a while. Maybe it's something you guys have always wanted to do, but you're not sure how to get started. If you go to podbean.com/misfitfaction, you guys will get a month of free podcasting on us. That is a gift from us. So make sure if you guys are looking to start your own show, you reach out to us and go to podbean.com/misfitfaction. Also, maybe you guys have your own online business or service that you're always looking to grow, and advertising is a very big part of that. If you guys go to sponsorship.podbean.com/misfitfaction, you guys can get $100 worth of free advertising, again, as a thank you from us to you guys. That's sponsorship.podbean.com/misfitfaction.